Begin transmission.
You are listening to Corellian Run Radio, your route through hyperspace to the latest news on Star Wars: The Old Republic.
Hi, and welcome to Corellian Run Radio. I'm Kathy.
And I'm Carla.
This week, we are joined by my daughter, Roxanne. She has done a lot of the artwork, or all of it, actually, and the graphic work on our site, including that little Sith or Jedi flash piece, which you may or may not have seen. If you haven't, you should come and check it out, because it's very cute. It's an interactive video, the test of the garbage cans, now with conversation wheels, so it'll be just like playing Tor when it comes out. Anyway, nice work, and welcome to the show, Roxanne.
Thank you. Hi, guys.
Hi there. I guess why don't we first ask you a little bit about your background, like your schooling and your work, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, I got a fine arts degree in 3D animation and modeling, and that's what I do for a living. I'm a 3D modeler for a small e-learning team at a consultant firm in New Jersey. So we make a lot of simulation kind of game-based learning things. It's like not really the game industry, but it's cool because I'm getting a lot of practice and I get to like work in kind of an open creative environment and figure out game design stuff. So it's fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the next best thing to working at an actual gaming company.
Yep.
That's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like it's giving you the stepping stone to really get into some hardcore core gaming design.
Yeah, well, it's cool because you learn a lot about the workflow and the pipeline of 3D, getting models into optimized form for 3D engines and stuff. And it's cool because everyone on my team, not so secretly, wants to work in video games. So all our brainstorming sessions are like, oh yeah, this thing from Call of Duty, let's do that and somehow apply it to the Department of Commerce, which doesn't always work, but it's a fun environment to be a part of.
That's good. Well, how about if you also, let's see now, you are also a gamer, you're not just a 3D designer. Now, I know you haven't played a whole lot of MMOs, but you did play a little World of Warcraft, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm in an off year right now, because I haven't played since, the end of college, or right when Wrath of the Lich King was coming out, but I did play a little WoW, and I played Galaxies for probably a couple months back in high school.
Oh, that's right. I remember the best part of that game was creating the character. And then you're not sure what to do after that.
Yeah. The worst part of that game was waiting for the transports between other planets. I'd never really understood why they were 15 minutes apart.
That's right. Oh, that's funny. But you've played a lot of BioWare games as well as other games, right?
Yeah. I love BioWare. That's probably my favorite game genre, the kind of narrative driven, sprawling RPG that's really story based. And I think BioWare, probably of all the developers ever, does the best job. And they've just been getting better and better and building off the foundation that they built with Black Isle and Baldur's Gate and Fallout and stuff. And now we're at the level of Mass Effect 2, which is it's a fantastic example of narrative storytelling through games, and I'm excited for Tor.
Yeah, it'll be hopefully just KOTOR, but now as an MMO.
Yeah.
Which you always talked about, KOTOR being so good, which is why I started playing it. Anyway, all right, well, why don't we just move on? We usually say a little bit about what we've done this week. This week, I have been sucked into, thanks to you, Roxanne, both Chime, which is this really wonderful little, I don't know what to call it, it's just sort of a puzzle game with music and shapes and fitting them together properly, and it's really kind of mesmerizing and addictive.
It's like what Tetris always wanted to be but was never fanciful enough to be.
Yes, and having the Portal song is a nice little bonus to play too. Mm-hmm. But and then also they had that great deal on Steam for Left 4 Dead 2, so I've been killing lots and lots of zombies lately. So much that, like, when I go to sleep, I, like, see the game and thinking about things, new strategies, how to get those gas cans fast enough. But anyway, Carla, how about you? What did you do this past week?
I really didn't do too much of anything. My husband was on vacation, and we just kind of hung around the house most of this vacation. We've got a lot of the little things that kind of annoy you, and you put them off until you can't put them off anymore. We got them done. We did buy a multimedia Apple Mini computer to put all of our media on, and it to serve as a server for us. So we're in the process of putting all of our DVDs and movies and all of that on one small machine, which is good for you.
That's cool.
Well, yeah, if we can get it done, my God, it's going to take us forever.
I know. That's something I don't even want to contemplate. But, you know, staycation, that's always good.
Yeah. Well, we just, you know, with us going camping a lot, and we're always taking a big bag of movies and stuff to watch, you know, at night when we're kind of bored and wanting to wind down. Instead of doing that, we're just going to disconnect the Mac Mini and bring it. It saves us a lot of space.
There you go. And Roxanne, you went somewhere this weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to the New York City Comic Con on Saturday.
And cool. How was it?
It was really good. I've never been to, you know, a convention of any type, like anime or comic or otherwise. So I was like pretty overwhelmed, mostly because I kind of went in with the expectation of everyone was telling me that it was going to be, you know, like small and unimpressive. I guess because they're comparing it to the San Diego one, which is like huge, and like right. The entire like film industry is there for some reason. It was at the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York, and it was pretty big. It was like spread across like two or three floors, and it just felt like being in like a mosh pit the entire time. Well, I went on Saturday, which was the busiest day, but yeah, you were just like crowded in with all these people, and like, you know, there's a lot of them are in costume, and you're just like, oh, I have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, so you missed the panel, I guess. I think at Comic-Con the artist and the inker for Blood of the Empire were there on Sunday, so you didn't get a chance to see them, but although they might have been there for book signing. But you did get to see some games, didn't you, when you were there?
Yeah, they had a whole like section for, I guess, like different developers, and I spent a lot of time watching Visceral's booth, and they were showing off some like really cool like gameplay footage of Dead Space 2, and they're like, their booth was just set up really nice because they had a lot of these big screens, and you could kind of stand behind their line because their line wrapped behind their booth, so you could stand in front of the rail and like just watch people playing the games, and you didn't, which was cool if you didn't want to like stand in line, which I didn't.
Right. Well, that was fun. I almost thought about going there, but oh well. Maybe next year.
Absolutely. Well, that's kind of our sign that it's time for our next host challenge.
Fact.
You know it to be true.
Or fiction.
That's impossible!
I'm going to read three bits of information or leads about the game. Two of them will be made up or not yet confirmed. Only one will be a fact, confirmed by BioWare. Your job is to pick out which one is true.
Okay, I think Roxanne and I are going to work together as a team this week.
Yay. All right. Yay! Okay, here's your three leads. One, Ilum is the sunny vacation spot for the Republic, and it was just announced as the newest planet. Ilum, known amongst the Jedi as the place to collect certain crystals for their lightsaber. Or three, the Jedi have long protected Ilum, and it is still under Jedi control. So after hearing all three leads, which one is the confirmed fact?
Oh, so this is an all Ilum factor fiction week, right?
Which means if you didn't read that one update, you're kind of like out of line.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, I remember the pictures, and it did not look like a sunny vacation spot to me, so I think number one's out.
Yeah.
And what was the last one? Oh, it's not under Republic control anymore, right? Didn't the Sith attack?
They, like, finally figured out that there were, like, tiny enclaves there and are now trying to, like, take control for, like, secret nefarious reasons that no
yes.
one knows.
Which have not been revealed yet, but hopefully will be during the game or maybe before. So that leaves number two, right? So, which I don't even remember.
It was that it's a known spot for what Jedi to harvest.
Oh, the crystals.
Yeah, lightsaber crystals.
For the crystals.
Yep.
Correct.
Right, which I think even is only the blue and green crystals. Does that sound right?
Is it?
I don't know. I think
I thought it was the yellow.
Oh, well, anyway,
but anyway, we're probably both correct.
I think it's the pink one.
Definitely number two. Is that right?
That is correct.
Up next, developer updates and breaking news.
From the Newsnet. And beyond.
Okay, well, let's begin with the Friday update from October 1st, which is two updates ago. That would be the Designing the Advanced Classes System, and it was in the form of a developer blog by Greg Zoller. I like developer blogs. I feel that they have excellent game mechanics information, as well as kind of give you a good overview. So if you really, and this was a big one, so if you really went through all the different sections, there was a lot of fun information in there. They started with the overview of the advanced class system, which gave you the basic stuff that we already know, the fact that there are two skill sets that you will be able to choose from, and then the third shared tier. And then they talked about how they want to go with the traditional MMO classes, the healer and tank, etc., because they feel that people like those classes, so they want to give them the opportunity to play that even though they're working with that soft trinity. All right, so then they zoomed in on the smuggler, and they again gave us the scoundrel and gunslinger trees, which we knew about, and then they broke those off into even smaller pieces, which were scrapper, sawbones, sharpshooter, and dirty fighting, which were all sounded like fun things. Did you guys get a chance to look at the update?
Yeah, I also like the developer things, just because it's really interesting, like seeing just behind the process of like how they build this stuff up. Something that like really caught my attention was near the beginning, where they're talking about how every time they look at a class, they really look to see what people expect from just like the genre in general and like the movies, and then how would we integrate these expectations into the game via like the game component or the advanced classes?
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like, I think that's really neat, because this is something that BioWare does, and they always do it really well, which is they keep the narrative in mind, and then they use that, they build from a story concept, and they build it out into a gameplay element. And it's just really cool, because they're, you know, the people, like, they love the Star Wars, like, the content and all the story stuff, and when you use that to inform your gameplay elements, it just creates this really great experience where everything's sort of, you know, interconnected, and everything, you know, makes sense.
Mm, yeah, that is really cool, and you know, that's their big thing. They're talking about story. and yeah, very very neat. All right, so what did you think about the scrapper, sawbones, sharpshooter, dirty fighting abilities?
I thought that they were kind of cool. The thing that I liked was the sawbones with the powerful emergency med pack. You know, I mean, you could see, like, this old cranky person, you know, and doing some in-the-field med work or whatever. But on the the question that I had that kind of just, you know, was one of those questions was, can the emergency med pack be used on other people, or is it just self med pack?
Oh, I was only thinking of using it, well, probably on yourself, but I definitely was thinking of it on other people. In fact, I was wondering, could this be a res? Or is it just like a really big heal?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, don't we have to have some kind of res class in this game? I really liked the name Sawbones. I thought that was a fun title.
I like the name, and I like the role as kind of like a healing support thing, just because, you know, when you think of, like, the smuggler and from the movies or just the stuff that we've been seeing, I wouldn't immediately think that it's a class that could heal and stuff, and that just, like, shows that they're, you know, the Trinity is kind of there, and those familiar traditional roles are there for people who are, you know, really used to it, because, you know, we've all had, like, a decade plus learning these roles, and that's what we're familiar with, but with these roles like Sawbones and stuff, it just shows that, you know, I think we as players are going to be encouraged to explore, like, different combinations and different play styles, which is really encouraging.
Right, right, yeah. In fact, when you go in the Sawbones skill set, there it seems like their abilities are a boost to their healing and the support-related abilities, and then they said including the emergency med pack. And then the Scrapper skills... They talk about the offhand scattergun. Is that the one that's supposed to make your enemies flee or scatter them? I seem to remember talking about that last time. But the scrapper skills seem more, I don't want to say DPS related, but they aren't the healing support things. You have the melee moves, and that's one that has the stealth field generator. So you'll have more of the stealthy things in the scrapper skill set.
That's right. They're talking about being like a stealth healer or something. Really.
Yeah. So that could be interesting.
That's kind of scary if you actually think about it. I mean, when I read that and I saw that he was stealthed and he's healing, I'm like, what the heck?
That's awesome.
You know?
Does that even...
No, that terrifies me, because can you imagine in a PvP situation where you've got all this group of stealth people that can heal? I'm like, oh my God.
It seems like that is solely a PvP thing that you would do. You don't need to stealth to heal if you're just out in the world, you know, fighting.
Well, actually, you probably would in a group situation, because in a group situation, let's say that you're in an instance and anybody that is revealed is taking some sort of damage or getting aggro from some, you know, area,
right,
or person.
So what, now
group.
Now not only are they stealth, but they're not like generating aggro. So
what?
Like
how hiding would
behind
you
a rock and healing people?
Yeah, but how would you? I mean, if you think about it, we're so used to games like WoW to where anybody stealthed, if they do any action whatsoever, they come unstealthed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now we're talking about a game that is introducing stealth, and you could stealth and hide and heal. I mean,
secretly,
I'm kind of afraid of that. Seriously.
Yeah, and I think definitely the PvP consequences seem the most dramatic. I don't know. It'll be cool to see. So that was those were more the scoundrel moves. The gunslinger moves, they had the sharpshooter and dirty fighting, which...
Dirty fighting is an action. That is not a label.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I hate that name.
Yeah. Although it certainly is descriptive. You know exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah, I would hate it too if I didn't think it's so perfectly exemplified, like, what the smuggler is. Because it seems sort of like a class built around, like, a collection of cheap shots.
Yes, exactly. Like, yeah, maybe
I will not fight fair.
Maybe cheap shots is a better.
Well, that's even descriptive. It's not. I mean, you know, it's not a title, sort of. You know, in other words, somebody on our forums actually said, "What about ruffian?" I mean, because you know that maybe they're going to fight dirty. You've got to come up with a more descriptive name.
Ruffian sounds like two, like, 1800s pirates and people in frilled shirts and stuff.
What, in Sawbones doesn't?
Sawbones?
Well,
no,
I guess
that's
not that. Yeah. Oh, well. So, anyway, so gunslinger, the sharpshooter skills are primarily what, to increase the DPS? especially...
Are those, like, the things where you have access to illegal gun mods and stuff?
Yes, I think that actually might be under Dirty Fighting. More, okay. Like, and then they have the sneaky attack, such as Shot in the Back, which I like. And then Shrapnel Bombs. That's also under the Dirty Fighting skills. And
I'm kind of excited about the bomb thing, though.
Yes.
Seriously, I can remember... back in the old Ultima Online days where you had these explosion potions, you could actually set them up to kill people. You know, so I think of those type of things, and it was so cool. So I'm hoping you can use those in PvP.
Yeah, yeah, that definitely sounds pretty great. And let's see, finally, the shared skill tree is the luck tree, which for the smuggler, well, I think... Okay, yeah, it enhances base class abilities, they're saying. So, for example, like you'll get, you know, energy regeneration when you're undercover, or you get something called very critical hits when using the dirty kick. Yeah, that's the move that I was thinking of when I saw the dirty fighting.
The smuggler is a classy guy.
Yeah, definitely.
I like him.
One thing I thought was... it made me think, because they had Greg Zoller, and he's, you know, saying, well, the great thing about these trees is that you can distribute the points freely across all three trees, and, you know, that's unique or whatever. And I was thinking, well, but is it really? Is it because in WoW you could do that also? I mean, it wasn't like you had to put... Well, of course, they had the thing where you had to put so many points maybe to get to the next level, but really... you did have some freedom to go across three, but you didn't really, because, you know, the min-maxers take over and say, well, you have to have this many points in this section and this many points in that section.
But maybe that's what they're saying. Maybe he's saying that you're not going to have X amount of points to get to the next level.
Yeah, is he? Is he saying that?
I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what he means. It's the way he wrote it, it's hard to interpret exactly what he means, but it leads me to believe that maybe he's giving us the choice to spread those points across three trees without any restrictions.
Right, which brings the question of, you know, how much, you know, you have, how do you balance, you know, complete freedom to do whatever you want, and then, but still be an effective character.
Agreed.
So, we'll see, I guess. It remains to be seen. Yep. The other thing, I guess, which makes the advanced class system different, which has been talked about before, is the fact that depending on what you put your points into, you will actually be unlocking the ability to use certain gear. Now, that is an interesting idea. So they talk about special lightsaber types, heavy weapons, gadgets, and armor, and all this will, in addition, it will lead to the visual differentiation. So I guess you're going to be able to say, not only is that person a... you know, a smuggler, you're going to be able to say that person is a Sawbones smuggler or whatever, or a scoundrel, maybe. I don't know how...
But see, I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't know what the talent trees look like, but that, to me, sounds like that will just encourage you to not spread out your points. Because if you're getting these, like, oh, well, I can get, like, these little abilities if I spread them out, or I can, like, start actually unlocking gear if I put all my stuff in Scrapper. But I don't know, because, like, I don't know what the tree looks like, so...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, the reason I don't like that is because it goes back to the fact that I want that slot in our character creation screen to hide some of this stuff or mimic or change, because I don't want to know that he's a scrapper.
Uh-huh.
I want to know, I mean, I want to have some mystery there. When I see somebody and maybe they're an opposing faction, again, maybe I'm just thinking PvP, but I don't want to know when I see someone that's in the opposing faction and I go up to fight them, I don't want to automatically know, okay, oh yeah, he's a smuggler or he's a, you know, a gunslinger or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know that. I want there to be that mystery so that when he hits me from behind and kicks me or something, I'm going, oh, crap. You know, it's a dirty fighter, you know? And then I've got to think fast. I mean, I don't want to have to end it. The moves that the opposing faction are already anticipated before we ever engage.
Right.
I don't think that that's good.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a PvP argument for
an... I mean, if you, like, think about, like, the universe and stuff like that, you, like, there would be, you know, class, like, types that you would be able to just, like, tell if you were, like, you know, in a cantina or something and you saw someone wearing, like, you know, goggles, and they have, like, a sniper rifle, and you're like, oh, well, they're, like, some type of, like, sharpshooter or scout. That's, like, that's part of, like, the world. It's the visual language of being able to identify people based on what they look like. So I don't know how I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's kind of cool.
But most people, like, if you were a sniper, mm-hmm. you're not going to be in there with your goggles and your sniper rifle. You're going to kind of be incognito and knock them off. You know, you're going to, you don't want to look like everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it, you, you know, it's
you're
kind
of... You're
going to
take off your goggles and you're going to put them in your backpack.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway. I think a certain amount of that is good. I guess to have it to the level of detail that... where you can tell exactly how many points they have in each tree might be overdoing it, but yeah, we'll have to.
Yeah, we'll see.
Anyway, the last thing that I got from that developer's blog was just the emphasis. I think we already sort of knew this intuitively, that you are going to have to choose a specialization. It's like not choosing is not going to be an option. So I guess probably at some point you're going to go to your trainer and they'll say this is it, and then you, if you don't choose, you're not going to be able to level anymore. I don't know, but so it isn't like you can hold all your talent points forever and WoW and or you know until you decide what you want to do.
Then you get out there in the real world and decide, oops, I didn't train in that, so I'm doing one damage.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. So, all right. But one thing is that I thought, for some reason, I had in my mind that the level was going to be 10. Level 10. Did I just make that up, or am I thinking of WoW?
No, that's what they
said. Did they say it?
Level 10 is when you change it. They wanted it to be done early enough in the game, but I think level 10 is kind of like... scary too early.
I know, especially yeah. Yeah,
because they're not letting us change. It's final. I mean, I know nothing in the game is final
so far. Yes,
yet. So I far I mean, I'm hoping that the outcry of the people
well maybe because it's like because it's really so scary early, like you said, that just means, you know, if it's really early, then it wouldn't be a big deal to just to like get another character up to 10. Well, like, I mean, that is a big deal, I guess, if you get to level 40 and you're like, oh, I hate this.
I should never.
But if we're earning points, I mean, even if we've decided to go to our tree and move up at one certain path at level 10, we really won't know how viable it's going to be until we get it in more advanced levels. And if we can't go back and undo it, I think that's a major snafu.
Yeah.
Major problem.
Yeah, it's you know, it's because it's a new game. There isn't, you can't go to the whatever.
Yeah,
the
I guess especially if they've said all this stuff about like you're gonna be able to spread your talent points out against the three trees, then that's like to me saying that, you know, they're encouraging you to explore and try different things. And if you can't change that once you've set it down, then that's like, well, you know, don't really explore. Do the correct thing the first time because you're not going to get another shot.
Exactly.
If you know what that is.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you know what that is, that's the problem.
Yeah.
You've got to know what that is. And that means where you're going to research it, either by doing it or you're going to have to spend time on a website somewhere.
Which
you know,
there
can,
won't be on day one.
You can listen to super informative podcasts.
That's right.
There you go. But until they play the game, how are they going to know?
we'll make it up.
There you go.
All right. Are we done with the designing?
Yeah, we're kind of done with that. But that kind of leads us into the next section. The Ask a Jedi website did an interview with founder and lead developer, or development director, Aaron Cox, on the new Tor wiki site, the r2-db.com. What I found exciting about this is that it's going to be like a WoWhead or a ThoughtBot type.
We were just talking about
database that we were just talking about. You know, to where they're going to have the different information about the quest and about the armor and what stats it has, where it can be found, who you can get it off of, where the trainers are, where the crafting stuff is. I mean, if it's anything like WoWhead, it's gonna rock. r2d2.db, welcome to the community, and we're excited, or at least I'm excited, to see you take the leap, because that is quite a feat. What do you think?
Yeah, we definitely are going to need something like that, so it's good to see that it's up already. I actually went there yesterday, and they it's up. I mean, not complete, and you know, obviously they're going to be adding stuff, but you can, you know, go to the, you can click under classes and abilities, and they've gathered information from people who have posted stuff, who have played it, like when you go to Darth Vader, remember we were talking about how you can go, and they actually have the abilities and the distance and the time it takes. So they've gathered whatever information they can from other sites, and they've put it into r2db.com, you know, for now. And so there is quite a bit of information up there right now. They said, I think Aaron Cox said they're also going to get like a talent calculator type
I think
of thing.
They said that they built one already, but they just don't have the actual talents.
Yes, they don't have the information from the game itself. So it's so it will have stuff like that.
It's complete minus the talents.
Yes, and they hope to have, well, they said, some kind of social features. They haven't really elaborated that it was. So they want it to be a little bit different, or have more things than just, you know, you're basically Alakazam or Wowhead and WoW. So it's good to know that somebody's got that, you know, going. They've gotten a handle on that thing.
Well, I'm really excited about the talent calculator, because that may fix what my fear of having to make such an early decision. But I hate that we have to go out of the game to get it. I'm still having a trouble with that. But I'd rather at least have that, so that I don't make the wrong decision if I can't change my mind.
Right, so. Right. So, all right. What's next? I guess weekend. October 5th through the 8th. The first thing that came out of there was an interview with Greg Walton and Matt Ferrer. Greg Walton is the vice president and co-studio general manager of BioWare Austin, and Matt Ferrer is the president of ZeniMax Online Studios. Zam.com did an interview, and they basically talked a little bit about just online gaming in general. In fact, the Game Developers Conference online, there was no specific tour presence, but there were several people from BioWare who came in, and they were just talking about game design in general. So that was useful in terms of seeing where BioWare's heads are as they develop their games, including Tor. Did you read it, Carla?
Yeah. I kind of like the whole talk about the evolution of gaming and how it started out as MUDs and text-based, and how they have watched it evolve from those types of games into something so massive and online, so that it brings in the community. Because, you know, used to with our old Dungeons and Dragons games, we would go to someone's house, or we would go sit around outside and have all these roll the dice, and people were interacting, and then it went to single player and doing all these RPGs online, and it was all done alone. And now we're evolving and kind of coming back to our roots of including a massive bunch of people and getting to know other people and new people, and I kind of like that.
Going along with that, I feel like with the communities merging and stuff like that, that Tor is like really the perfect example of how developers are trying to, especially BioWare with Tor, they're trying to bring that single player experience that they're really famous for, like, to, you know, the massive like online community,
right,
which is really neat, which you couldn't have done, you know, like a couple of years ago.
Yeah, definitely. And I also was interested to hear like the online gaming movement in general is kind of going from that hardcore multi MMO focus to a broader view, which includes, you know, the casual social media games like Farmville and such, which of course a lot of people poo-poo, but
that, like,
it's big.
Actually, that struck me as a little weird when Matt was during his part of the interview, when he actually kind of equates those two communities. He's like, well, they're both just gamers. Like, the delivery mechanism's different. I'm like, wow, these people are really coming at it from a different angle than, like, the game developers. I mean, because they're not focused on mechanics. They're really just looking at the audience and, like, you know, the like, the payment methods and, like, yes, what makes things markedly, like, successful.
I know.
Like, geez. Because I know that, like, the MMO crowd, they're pretty hardcore. And, you know, the casual crowd is casual, which maybe why they're so, like, defensive about each other, because they're kind of, like, living in the same, like, cultural space. Like, I don't even think about casual gaming, really, because I'm, like, a console gamer, and it's not, like, on my radar, but, yeah.
But, you know, I think that the whole thing kind of brought to my mind that those people that we consider casual gamers, mm-hmm, like the Farmville and Mafia War people on Facebook and... they're not casual. They're closet hardcore. Have you seen all of those damn requests?
That's kind of a good point.
For pigs and...
Well, yeah, because, like, who got me into Cafe World?
Probably me.
Yes.
And people got me into it. And that was awful, because everything is on a timer. And you're like, oh, no, I have to wake up at 3 a.m. to, like, fix my souffle. Like, why did I do this to myself?
Why did we take it so seriously, I guess, is the question.
But that's what I'm talking about. They're seeing the bigger picture.
True.
Because
yeah,
now those little casual gamers that are closet hardcore, mm-hmm, those are the ones that are killing us.
Yep.
With it, taking the subscription base into these microtransactions.
Those games.
And people are seeing that, and they're making so much money at it that we're all in trouble.
I know.
I was
amazed when I first heard how much money things like Farmville and Mafia Wars, because, you know, I was like, really? You know, people are...
I think, is that because the people buy the points and stuff, so they don't have to,
well,
like...
it's more
like... And
they
can buy special things. They even sell those silly cards at Walmart.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, I think they talk about that a little later, I don't know, in the discussion about grinding and stuff, about how...
Mm-hmm.
Like, microtransactions are related to that, because it's like, you can bypass it if you pay us money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, in fact, let's move on to the next topic, which is Damien Schubert's session, who is the principal lead systems designer for Tor. And he conducted a session called How Online Gaming Has Adopted the Grind. And he talked a little bit about the... what, the reward of paying for something? And what was it about the way those little casual social media games, they really, their grind is like, what, increasing your number of friends? That kind of, how does that work in Mafia Wars? You need friends?
You need friends to get, open up and get new, a next level of some special coin or gear or whatever.
They compared it to, like, the early days of EverQuest, or maybe the way EverQuest is currently played, I'm not sure, but how, like, if you want to advance, you must make friends, and you must, like, play with other people, and that's the way all these kind of, like, Zynga social networking games work, where you have to, like, work through your existing social network, and, you know, you need Mafia members, or you, mm-hmm, need, like, cafe patrons to, like, visit you in order to, like, succeed, which is probably one of the reasons why they're, like, really successful, because you have to be, like, reaching out, like, all the time to get feedback.
Right, and so that's a different kind of grind. And he, at the beginning of his the PowerPoint presentation, which you can see, by the way, and we'll have links for in our show notes for this, he has on his own personal blog, he has a link for his PowerPoint presentation. And if you're at all into, you know, the thought behind game design, it actually is pretty interesting reading and humorous. He has, like, humor in there also. But the beginning, he defines grind as is what happens when you make the player do something he doesn't want to do in order to do something he does want to do. So, yes, that's exactly, you know, in terms for the social media. Yeah, the friends thing. And that actually, you know, so that's why they can make money, because you just buy friends if you need them. Or in Farmville, if you want to get a larger plot, you can buy a larger plot, and rather than, you know, trying to suck 20 more friends into your Farmville madness.
It's sort of like exploiting the fact that, like, nobody likes grinding. Because they're like, here, you can either do this for the next 3 months, or you can give us $10 and we will bypass it for you. And people are like, oh, well, I'm going to give them $10.
Yep, exactly. I also really liked his when he talked about the rewards that you get, and he defined them in terms of extrinsic rewards and intrinsic rewards. And what the intrinsic rewards are, the more like the satisfaction of a job well done, that kind of thing, right? Which, you know, I don't know. That does actually motivate me when there's something big and I've been working on it and I finally finish it. It felt good. And so I can see
that. No, give me stuff.
No, because that's the whole like rationale behind like achievements, right? Because they're nothing. It's like a couple pixels and like just the validation of saying you did. Yeah. But like people are obsessed with them. I'm like, I love them on like Xbox, where you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to spend all afternoon like doing something that isn't really part of the game so I can get this badge and like 20 fake points.
Yes. Yeah. And Carla, you do those too. You've been working on achievements.
I like achievements. I do like achievements. I'm an achievement
whore. Yeah. So you do get something out of that intrinsic reward. I mean, sometimes you actually get a title, which is almost an extrinsic reward because you can display it. But you know, I remember we did the classic Dungeons achievement, which got us absolutely nothing except the little check mark in our
That's right. But, that's right. But it was on the checklist. We had to do the checklist.
Yes, and it was good.
One of the more, what he says something kind of like poetic that I just sort of liked, where he kind of makes the term like grind and like devotion like synonymous. And I was like, oh, that's just like really attractive. Because he talks about how there's like, you know, the skill-based kind of like achievements that you can get. And then there's like the collection ones, which are probably like a little more frowned upon. But yeah, it rewards you for just like sticking it out, like devotion. Like if you really just like do it, if you like put down the time to do it, you can get this like achievement or actual like game reward. Right. Which sets you apart from the people who just like log in and are like, oh, I'm going to play for 20 minutes. And you're like, no, I like... I played for 40 hours, and I touched every computer console in the known world.
So there. I know. Well, yeah, and I also thought it was interesting when he differentiated between a reward for, or let's see, devotion achievements versus like skill achievements.
Based,
the devotion one is more like the one where I touched every console.
Yeah.
And skill is... Well, that would be like when I was watching you play Alan Wake, right? Except you decided to go for the achievement where, I don't know, you have to beat everything with your bare hands.
You have to, like, run through the last chapter without using guns. And I, like, randomly decided to do it, and it was horrible.
But you did it, and didn't it feel good?
Well, yes, sure.
I was falling asleep.
It was only sad because I was trying to get to a story thing to show you, and then it was taking, like, 8 times as long.
Right,
and I was like, oh, this is only take seconds. No, I died.
Again.
But you know, guys, when part of the... One of the things that the Darth Hater had on their interview, or that they came out, they did a little... You know,
Q&A.
Synopsis or whatever of online gaming has adopted the grind. One thing that I got out of their interview was the question, they had a very good question about the Gear Score mod that WoW has, not adopted, but there's a mod that you can use in WoW to determine gear score. And they were quite surprised at the reaction that people were on Gear Score. And it had to do with the grind, because for those that don't know, gear score is an addition of your gear, your enchants, your gems, everything that enhances your gear, and it comes up with a collective score. And there's you can go to like wow-heroes.com and put in your server name and put in your name, and it brings up this little chart that shows you what your gear score is, and it'll show you what dungeons or instances you should be working on. And now they're using that tool to not group with people.
Yeah, right? I remember he was saying that about how like you really only need like a group with such and such gear. It's like pretty unremarkable to run a group, but if if people look and your score is like below a certain number, they'll just disband.
Yeah, that seems like an abuse.
But that happens. The system.
Yep.
That happens. Yeah. I mean, and I find even within our guild that we look at gear score, but what people are taking out of the equation is talent.
I was just going to say,
and someone's ability to play that character, because I have seen people come in with not great gear, but they know their character backwards and forwards, mm-hmm. and that makes the grind for all of this so much better. But I think introducing certain things like gear score was a big mistake.
Yeah, and it's not only that you go to a website, it's like displayed. If you have it, you can just see it. The person standing, next to you, you can see what their gear score is.
I guess it's just not good, because it allows people to like kind of make a snap judgment about you. Where you're like, oh, well, I looked you up on such and such, and now I know that you're like a crap player. And it's like, well, now I know that you're a jerk. But like, you don't necessarily know that I'm a crap player.
But it goes back to the grind issue, where when you go into, let's say, the instance of Iceground Citadel and WoW, you have to have your gear at a certain level just to be able to succeed. And because they have made it the grind for that instance so gear dependent that a lot of people can survive through that and move through that instance based on their gear alone without putting the talent or the way they play their character. The gear takes more precedence over than talent.
Yeah.
And that's up to a certain level. Now you still have to be able to survive, but they're intermixing that into the grind.
Right.
I guess it's just, kind of.
Yeah. It's the lazy assessment, and it, you see the number, and if it's a certain number, then you probably don't have to worry about it. So it's just, some people, they don't want to, quote, waste their time. if they think the odds are going to be too much that this five man is going to be sucky, then we're just not going to do it.
Yep.
Which is, that's unfortunate.
The next part of that was on the that also was in that same session was Ask a Jedi. And one of the things that I got from that particular article was that it was stated that Tor had too many of what they call story quest or gold quality content originally, to where they had so much that it felt grindy. So they had to remove some of them so it wouldn't quite feel as grindy.
I think.
And those were story based.
What they're talking about is that, because, the stuff that's like grinding is, it's kind of like repetitive and it's something you're used to and you're not really experiencing or learning anything new. And with all their story things, it's like a little bit more scripted and it's supposed to feel like, a reward because you're seeing through this kind of a playable story event. But, and this kind of goes back to the two different like reward types that they had, the one that you get for like a job well done and the one that's like built into the game and stuff, where it's like the more you reward someone, the less they feel each reward. So they, I guess, decide that they kind of had to like pad them out so that like you didn't get bogged down, because you never want to get to the point where you're like, I'm sick of all this awesome like art and scripted story stuff, I'm just gonna like skip through it because I have like way too many quests.
Right. Well, I think they talked about how it sounded like they originally had all the quests, available at one time in this one spot. So you were just sort of overwhelmed by the amount of, things that you have to put on your list, your to-do list. And then so they had the idea of, well, they got rid of some. They trimmed some of the ones that were weaker. And then they spread them out. So it's more like you're doing a quest and then, a smaller set of quests. And then while you're out, maybe this little side quest sort of pops up in your quest log.
While you're in the middle of another quest. It's right, just like, exactly. Oh, new bonus objective. And you're like, I'm completing a quest I didn't know I had.
Yeah, and that you don't have to run to the other side of the world. You can just do while you're there. Because that's the worst thing. When you go back and forth to the same place over and over again. And, why didn't you tell me to kill that? Two sections ago.
Like, I need you to go back and collect the shoes of the creatures you just killed. And you're are you serious?
Right, exactly. So, yeah.
But, that kind of reminds me of the fact when we're going back and we're doing these quests, how I talked about I'm worried that some of the people that play or come from a WoW background are going to have trouble with listening to all these beautiful storylines and that sort of thing. And I think that that kind of ties into the grindy feel of too much foo-foo, you know.
Possibly. and I guess the bottom line of that whole grind session seemed to be the important thing is you have to find the right balance for the proper amount of grind for the right reward, for the right reason. You know, it isn't something stupid.
It's like you have to have enough rewards, and you have to actually work at it a little to make the rewards feel like rewards,
right?
And not just like something else,
right? And then be innovative. Be, you know, and not just like the same type of quest over and over.
Oh, they're talking about, yes, things feel more like grinding the more separated they are from your final goal, which just made me think of back, early on in WoW when I was doing, I had played a warlock and I was doing my Dreadsteed quest. And, you know, that, like, quest chain starts with you having to, like, collect mushrooms or something like that in a cave. And it sucks because you're like, why am I doing this? Like, what does this have to do with, like, getting my awesome, like, fire, like, steed from the depths of wherever? It has nothing to do with it. It's just like, oh, I think that this quest chain should probably take you 100 hours. So you should spend the first 10 collecting mushrooms.
Yay. So anyway, that was, I would really recommend people go check out the little slide presentation because it's actually very, very clever and really insightful. Makes me feel good about Tor. It's like, oh, these are the kinds of minds that are working on. Was there anything else from that session that you guys...
Not that section.
Okay. Mm-mm. All right. Well, it sounds like we're ready to move on.
Yeah. That leads us to the next GDC panel, the strategies for successfully running an MMO from launch and beyond. On that panel was Rich Vogel from BioWare, also Turbine's Jeffrey Steelfill, and EA Mythic's Jeff Hickman, and Sony Online Entertainment, Lauren Jameson, and CCP's Nathan Richardson and Nexon's Min Kim. The one thing that I came away with this from, the first section was Gama Sutra did a recap of that, where developers need to remind customers what they're paying for. Basically, what I got out of that particular article was that you need to know your audience. You need to know what they're looking for, and you need to know how to execute it. For example, one of the games that they picked out was EVE Online. EVE Online, I think, is about 6 years or 7 years old.
Wow, is it
and
really?
They're, yeah, it's older than I thought it was when I was doing the research. Anyway, they are even bigger now than they were at launch because they didn't change the core of what they were all about. They just changed some of the different nuances of it. But they didn't get away, they didn't move from their core idea. Yeah. The what some of the smaller games are, or maybe those that are not as popular, tend to do is they want to go with what the market is doing now. For example, if there is a push to do a certain thing in a game, they tend to want to change their game or their core of what they are to go with the flow, so to speak. They should never do that, is what I came away from this article about. What about you guys?
Yes, and I think actually didn't someone say you don't bleep with the core game, I think was the quote, which you can't fully quote here, but that was good. There were two things that stood out to me. One was they talked about it's important that the game is immediately accessible right from the first click, you know, so that makes sense to me. You don't want to get this thing where it's just like impossible to start playing because they make you do all this ridiculous stuff. So that's good. You know, that seems like a good model. The more important thing was that I think they spent a lot of time talking about microtransactions and how, and they, what struck me was it's at the, the overview that I read said everyone on the panel agreed that microtransactions are going to be a big part of online gaming in the future. And I know that most people just hate microtransactions, the kind that they're talking about anyway.
Usually they're talking about microtransactions, like, instead of a subscription-based model, right? So it would be, like, weird to have, like, you have to pay $15 a month, but you also have to pay, like, you know, 99 cents for these potions. Because that just feels like you're getting ripped off, because you're already handing them your money, you know? But I kind of get it, where it's, like, the entire game is free, you can play it, but you can access different features if you pay them, like, tiny amounts. I would be more likely to do that.
Yeah, well, in fact, I thought that was really interesting because they talk about how part of increasing your player base is, you know, to get them playing for the first time. And, you know, you and I and, you know, everybody here is used to the idea of the monthly subscription, so we don't think about it. But a lot of newcomers are like, what? I'm not going to get sucked into, you know, $15 a month. They think that's too much of a commitment. So what these guys on the panel were saying, this is like a really good way to make it easy for a lot of people to try it. So I don't know. Maybe we have to adjust our thinking.
Well, if you sit back and think, games like Lord of the Rings Online, it was a subscription-based game, and now they have actually increased their business from going from a subscription-based game to now it's absolutely free to play, and now you have all these microtransactions involved. So they have actually increased their profits.
Yep.
By going from the free system to the microtransaction system. And if we think back to games, I know that my online gaming experience actually started with Diablo way back in the day. And I remember the little community that I was in, and they were talking about Ultima Online, and they were going, oh man, I'm never going to play that game. They're going to charge you $9 a month. Can you believe $9 a month? And I'm going, wow, that's horrible. You cannot pay to play. I mean, this game should be free. And look at me. I immediately went and started playing Ultima Online, and now I wish we had a game that was $9 a month.
Hey, that's right.
Instead of 15 or 20 or whatever. But so what we're feeling now, I think, is the same thing that I was feeling back then when we were talking about actually paying a subscription fee.
Yep.
So I think this, unfortunately, is going to be the wave. I kind of hate to see it coming, but I do understand that these gaming companies do need to make money. I mean, that's the whole point of making these fabulous games. I'm just afraid that it's going to be so much more than what I'm paying now. If it would average out to be, you know, $15, $20 a month, I would still be okay with that. But I can see where it would be so much more.
Right. Yeah. And not getting into the whole argument about if you're gonna, you have to pay for things that actually make a difference in your game, you know, like gear.
Yeah, we don't
want
to go there again.
I guess I'm just naive, but I was surprised by that information. Yeah, about Lord of the Rings Online, and they actually, guess what? And I think they even said that they were surprised at how, you know, how successful it was. I think their microtransactions are definitely going to be around for a while.
Ask a Jedi in their article kind of mentioned that the language of the game testing agreement for Tor is worded in such a way that it leads us to believe there may be microtransactions in Tor.
I think, like, now we're finally getting to a point with, like, Xbox Live and stuff like that where, like, DLC is pretty standard across, like, all, like, because people were really worried about that too. I guess that's sort of like microtransactions when it first came out, because they're like, what, like, I paid $60 like on launch day, I don't like the idea that the developers are like withholding content from me. But if you like think of, I'm like totally okay with it now, because you think about it, it just allows your favorite games to keep expanding, you know, like a year or more after like launch. Like, I love DLC. Like, the Mass Effect DLC is like some of the best stuff ever, and it's just awesome to think that, like, yeah, maybe in the next few months they're, I'm gonna be able to pay like $4 and get like a couple more hours of gameplay, which is like, it's a great deal. So I guess I'm just excited for maybe a couple years out from now when like microtransactions, like, you know, everyone's a lot more comfortable with it, and you know, the prices have kind of evened out to a standard where we feel like we're not being taken advantage of.
Right. Yeah. I can see that. And if it means new content, then you know, I think I'm okay with that.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Well, this most recent Friday update was our 16th planet. Is it Ilum or Ilum? Or something else.
I don't know. Ilum, I think.
Ilum. Okay. Ilum. I like Ilum. All right. So the 16th planet, which we talked about a little bit, it's dark and icy, and they have a Holonet entry, and there's some great screenshots and concept art. There's a little tiny one of their fly-through short videos, which is very pretty. And I guess that's it. I thought it looked. It reminded me of Netherscape. In WoW. I thought, oh, it's purpley and dark.
With laser beams.
I liked it.
Yes. Yeah, I thought it was very, very attractive in that dark, creepy way.
Is this another PvP planet? Do we know?
We don't know.
I don't think we know yet.
All right.
From the story about how the Empire has attacked all the destroyed all the Jedi enclaves, and the Republic is, you know, too weak to retake it. But yeah, I could see that being a PvP.
Every time they mention fighting, I kind of assume it's a PvP planet, which like is probably incorrect, because that would mean that there are only PvP planets.
Probably. Hey, I like that idea.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people would like that idea. The screenshots had like a crystal mine, like where the Jedis would go to get their crystals, and there was a Republic base, and then I think there was a shot of an Imperial base, and then I really liked the little round huts in the Jedi camps. I thought those were cute.
Did you see how they were all attached? And what I kind of envisioned is that there was some breathing module, the, you know, putting oxygen or something out to those little hutted areas.
No, I didn't. What, like by pipes or something? Or
yeah, it looked like they were kind of attached. So
aren't they? They're supposed to be
just
like
the way
little,
it made it look.
Little like temporary camps that, like I guess Jedi set up when they're on their like trying to make their lightsaber, which is sort of like a weird little solitary pilgrimage that you go on.
Right. A weird.
That's my favorite adjective.
Those weirdos.
Those weirdo Jedi. What's wrong with them?
Yeah, it's because it's, of course, aren't all these icy planets, or aren't all these planets like on the edge of the galaxy, it seems like. But anyway, this is way out there, and they have to go out there and you know, do their thing. So yes, I think what happened is because there were so many that they started setting. I don't know if they're temporary, because they also talk about temples being built.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but anyway,
they're just not like, you know, big settlements. You're only supposed to be there for like a couple days or weeks or whatever.
Right. Exactly. You're roughing it. yeah, so that's great. 16 planets so far. I think we can still expect more, because the last time, I think Daniel Erickson was asked about planets when right when Corellia was announced. He said there, you know, there's a lot more out there. So, or he seemed to imply that. So we'll see. I don't know how the balance of Jedi versus Sith planets is going right now, but I'm not sure whether this would be in the Jedi column or the Sith column. yeah, it'll definitely be an interesting one to visit eventually.
Okay, a couple of the quick mentions is the New York Comic Con Sunday event, Dark Horse Video Games, and a comics panel with the Blood of the Empire artist Dave Ross and inker Mark McKenna. It just happened this past weekend. And then there's a good article by game developer Damon Schubert, Make Better Bosses. You can get a full digital copy of the magazine for $3.95. We also have a link to that in our show notes. That kind of wraps it up for all the biggest tour news, which that brings us to our next segment.
Sith strong am I with the Force?
Or Jedi?
Last time we found out that Carla is anal retentive about keeping her gas tank full.
And we also learned that Kathy irresponsibly lets others in her family worry about having enough gas to leave the parking lot. So far, our scores are Carla -2 and Kathy +5. Remember, negative scores reflect a dark side tendency, while positive scores reflect a light side tendency.
All right, Carla and Roxanne, are you ready for your Sith or Jedi challenge?
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, this is the test of the express checkout. You are at the grocery store, ready to check out. You want to use the express checkout lane, but you are a few items over. The only regular lane that is open has 4 people with overflowing carts in line. What do you do? 1. You either go to the regular lane or put back the requisite number of items to be in compliance with express checkout rules. 2. Use the express lane anyway. Exceeding the limit by a few items is still following the spirit of the law. Or 3. When the person behind you complains, boldly stare them in the eye and add several handfuls of candy plus a few tabloids to your cart. When it's your turn, pay with cash. Use exact change. Okay, so, Roxanne, what would you do in that situation?
I think I would really want to stay in line, especially if I was only a couple items over. But I don't know, more than my love of the rules, I think I would be afraid of people being mad at me and like yelling at me. So I would probably just like suck it up and go to the normal line, even if I had to wait a little longer.
All right, well, you have chosen the light side, which would earn you a positive 1. You hate being stuck behind someone who is breaking the item limit rule, even by 1 or 2 items, so you cannot, in good conscience, try to sneak through yourself. All right, very good. You're a Jedi. Okay, Carla, how about you?
Actually, I want to lean towards 3, only because you used the word a couple items. Because I'm not going to sit there, I'm going to kind of like eyeball to see if I have like 10 items or whatever the express lane limits are. Uh-huh. And I'm going to eyeball it, and if I'm 1 or 2 items over, I probably would have just slipped through there. But I'm like a Nazi when it comes to stuff like that, when you have these women that roll these big, huge carts up to there in the express lane. And I don't know if you know this, but at Walmart, they have to take you. They can't tell you. You've got too many items. They can't turn you away. So, so I'm like, do you realize that this is a 20-item limit? I'm one of those Nazi people. So, but I would use the express lane. If I thought that I was actually over the limit, I would use the express lane and self-checkout myself, because I believe in the spirit of the things.
Okay, so
it should be quick.
2, right?
Correct.
All right. So in that case, you earn 0 points, and you have chosen a neutral path. There's no reason to have 3 express lanes open and only 1 regular lane. The store is practically begging its customers to cheat. Okay, good. And what would I do? You know, I would not be so bold as to put extra items into my cart, and I would be a little afraid. You know, I think that I would go with 2 also, because I, even though I do actually count item by item, I would say that if it's kind of ridiculous, and actually at my store sometimes only express lanes are open, I don't know what to do when I have that huge cart, but certainly if I only had 1 or 2 items, I would just go with the middle choice and say, that's close enough. So that would get me also the neutral path, which Carla got. So I think that our scores now stand are the same, right? Because we both
have
0.
That's correct.
So Carla is still at -2, and I am at +5. And, well, Roxanne, you had a late start, but that would put you at +1.
Hooray!
All right. Well, you can read all the past Sith or Jedi tests on our site at Corellian.com, CorellianRun.com. Keep score and see which way you lean.
All right, that sound means it's time for our community buzz segment, where we find out what the fans are talking about. One of the things that we've been kind of watching is there was a poll on the Tor forums that said, should advanced classes respec be allowed? And what was interesting about this is, like, 50% of the people said, no, you shouldn't allow respecs of your advanced class specking. And 40% said yes, and 10 don't really care. So that about 850 people voted, and I thought that was kind of very strange. But it kind of went back to the whole mindset of maybe some of these people that are from the KOTOR environment don't realize the repercussions that will happen in a massive online game like this. So,
yeah, I think that a lot of the people were more focused on, oh, well, that makes sense from a story, like a role-playing kind of point of view, because this is your story, the path that you've chosen, and it makes no sense for you to just suddenly be like, eh, toss it out the window. But I was, yeah, and I think the MMO players are, well, you know, this is not just a character that you're playing and in 40 hours or whatever you're going to be done with. This is a character that you're going to be playing maybe, hopefully, for years and years and years, and, you know, who wants to be locked into that?
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem with respecking, and I am one of those, like, those KOTOR people who look at stuff from, like, a story perspective. Yeah, because, like, if you're going to be pouring hours into the character and you really want that character, like, to belong to you, and, like, vice versa, you don't want to have to, like, re-roll if you, like, make a mistake. And actually, respecking is, like, something that BioWare allows you to do in some of their single-player games. Like, you can do it in, it's called Retrain Powers in Mass Effect, in Mass Effect 2. And you can't respec in the first Mass Effect, but if you import your character from Mass Effect 1 to Mass Effect 2, you get to choose, you can change your class. You can change everything about that character, like, if you want, bridging from Game 1 to Game 2. So there, I think I would be really surprised if there, in the end, turned out to be no form of respecking, just because, yeah, they want to open it up to be something that you can, like, you know, play around with and explore.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised at the number of people who you know, it's like pretty, who were strongly against the idea. So, although some people kind of hedged and said, well, you should be able to respect, but only within your chosen tree, I guess, or whatever, you know. So I guess that means you don't change from a scoundrel to a gunslinger.
Yeah, I heard that a lot. I heard that you could respect within your advanced class, but you should be stuck with your advanced class.
Right, so you can sort of fiddle around with the points, but you can't actually change it to the other side.
But what happens if, I mean, we just talked about them saying that you could put points in all three sections. If you can't go back and change the original founding section, then that one point may ruin your character.
Yeah, know? It depends on how the trees are actually set up. Yeah, because, you know, like in the way, like, the WoW trees are, I mean, sometimes you can't even get to stuff until you put in, you know, you can't get to the stuff at the bottom of your tree until you put, you know, you do the right distribution to get to,
right,
to, you know, the path to get there. So I don't know. It'll depend on what exactly this whole advanced class system is. Also, the other monkey wrench that you throw in there is that your advanced class system choices affect your gear. So now you have this gear that you can only use with your, yeah. So that could be where the developers are coming from when they say, you know, it's going to really just mess your character up too much if we allow it.
Remember Diablo, when you had, when you would have like a helmet or something that would give you plus 20 strength, but then like that allowed you to use your chest piece, so you could never take off your helmet, and then
yes,
everything
even
was
though
kind of like woven together.
Yeah, that was totally wrong for your class.
Yeah.
It's like, I need it so I can wear my chest piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so that's an old poll. I think has been around for a while, but
care if it cost me money. I want to be able to respec.
Well, and you know,
seriously.
I think maybe WoW is too easy now, because now you can just do it at the drop. You can have two, what do they call them?
Two main specs.
Yeah, and it maybe that is too much, but just to say it's permanent is kind of it's pretty dramatic, especially if after you if you say Roxanne that in Mass Effect they do allow you to change things. So
you have to pay money, but you know
that's okay.
Yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, and the other thread that was interesting. Actually, it's one that I started because I was listening. I was listening to something and I heard that in WoW they had this new app. Well, actually the app was that you can check your auction house from your smartphone, and that one's been around a while, and they're about to add the fact that you can add in guild chat to this app, and that made it to me it made it a little more interesting, although I still wouldn't pay extra. And it just got me thinking, I wonder what this community think about. So I asked on the official forums, you know, would you pay an additional monthly fee to have auction house availability and guild chat in Tor? And it wasn't a huge number of people that participated, only a little over 55 or so. But overwhelmingly, the response was pretty much like, no. For about 45 people said, no, I would not pay extra for that. And then there were a few that said yes, and a lot of people said they might do it for a one-time fee. But the idea of paying for it monthly was too much. And actually, it was sort of, there was some people who said, no, I wouldn't do it because I don't want the game to follow me around. Like when I'm away from the game, I don't want it to, you know, start being this thing that I'm obsessively checking in on all day. And I thought, oh, that's really refreshing in this day of permanent connectivity that there are actually people who are like, no, I wouldn't want it. And I wouldn't use it even if it was available. How about you?
But I would. I would. If it was available, I would definitely use it. And not just because it says the guild. Access to guild chat, that doesn't thrill me as much as the possibility of actually working the auction house. See, I have the iPod version that's free, and it only allows you to check to see what your auctions are doing that are already there. What they were talking about, I think they've already implemented it or selling it now, is you can actually start auctions. You can actually create new auctions, which you cannot do with the free version.
So it isn't just seeing how they're doing, it's actually working it.
Yeah, you can actually work the auction house off of your smartphone or iPod or whatever. And to me, because it used to be really hard to get money in WoW, I would have loved to have a fully functioning auction house ability. It will dilute the market a little bit, I think, but I would have loved that, because when you're working and you're at work and you know that you've got to watch this one auction to see if you need to redo it or whatever, because playing the auction house is a timed thing. In other words, you've got to get it at the right time. You know, you've got to watch what's going on in the market. And so, again, I'm not as much for the guild chat, but there's a lot of people that cannot play the game as much as they want. Yep. And then maybe on their lunch break, they want to check the auction house or chat with the guild mates or whatever, just to pass the time while they're eating their lunch. I think it's a cool feature.
Yeah.
Now, would I pay $2.99 a month for it? I might be kind of recanting that I said I wouldn't do that.
I feel like I was never that into the auction house, so like I don't think it's like worth it. I would totally be into it for paying like a flat fee right up front, but $2 on top of the 15, that's like a pretty sizable markup.
$3.
$3. Okay, that's ridiculous.
It's $2.99. I know. Well, think of it in terms of it's 20% extra a month. Yeah. Is it really that worth it?
I'm not against it for the reason that people are like, well, I don't want it like intruding on my life sphere. I sort of think that's awesome. Like, for all you awesome people out there who play Pokemon, the most recent, like, you know, Heart Gold and Soul Silver, they came with this little device called the Pokewalker. And it's a pedometer, and you load one of your Pokemon into it, and then you gain experience.
What?
This is awesome. You gain experience points for the number of steps you walk. So as you walk around all day, you're leveling up your characters. And I remember, like, I just had it in my pocket at work, and I'm, like, you know, shaking my leg unnecessarily. And I'm like, this would be the best thing ever if it was tied to, like, World of Warcraft, because you could just be, like, you know, leveling all the time, or, like, you know, walking around and stuff.
You could be mining thorium or whatever.
Wouldn't that be great? Like, yeah, and you just get that, it's connected to that grind thing. So you come home, you, like, you plug in your, like, your mining module or whatever, and you're like, oh, I now have, like, 30 more copper. And you're like, that's great. I, like, it was kind of passive. I had to buy this device for a one-time fee, but it was totally worth it.
I think that is so cool. And just think, welcome to microtransactions.
Well, I was just thinking that I think you're dangerously stepping into that territory of the haves and the have-nots, you know, because you're willing to spend the money, you're going to improve your game.
Yeah.
But they need to do something for the working class people. I mean, because there's a lot of people that work 8-10 hours a day. They only have a short window to play a game of 1 or 2 hours, and they are severely penalized because they only have 1 or 2 hours, where other people, college students or whatever, has hours and hours and hours of gaming time every day. And so if they could literally...
Well, that's the argument that you could use for justifying buying gold.
This is a little different because it's not like... But it's not like you're throwing down money and you get it instantly. It's like you have a new outlet to make experience or make minerals. You still have to do stuff. It's not completely passive. Like, you know, the options
you have to shake,
like,
your leg under your table.
No, hey, it's promoting, like, physical. Wouldn't that be great? They're like, okay, you can't get to level 20 until you run a mile. It's like, oh, all right.
But, you know, that's what Eve does. Eve Online, you have to set up different things or tasks, and it does things real time. For example, you may need to be training a specific skill. Well, you set it up, and it'll tell you, well, that's going to take 18 hours. Well, while you're at work, it is actually going and ticking and training you, and you are doing everything you need to do for that training real time, whether you're there or not. Yeah. And so I think that they need something like that real-time thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know if they need it, but it's like for people who want to utilize it, like that could be like a cool new thing that'll like keep you playing.
Right. Well, I love Star Wars Galaxies, where you could set your little mining device and it could go and mine for you for hours and hours, and you just come back and check in and empty your little cargo things.
Yeah.
It's doing it for you. You don't have to sit there and go hit this node a couple of times and then fly to this spot and hit this node a couple of... I hate mining and wow.
All right, well...
Anyway, that leads us to our next thread that's on our forums. PvPvE. We have a great topic in our forums that describes battles, and from our friends over at the KGB, the Knights of Glory and Beer. There's a little video there we were talking about. The whole thread started talking about how will PvPvE kind of work without messing up the whole, you know, getting the instance done versus having people interrupt you. And this little video described how you went and took down an entire walls of someone else's citadel castle type place.
Yeah, this is in a different game. In what game
is
that again?
I believe the game's Darkfall. That's the game that that KGB is currently in. Mm-hmm. It could very well be in something else like Shadowbane. I mean, because I knew that they were in Shadowbane for a while as well. But you could actually go and attack an opposing faction, or it could have even been, like in this particular case, they attacked the citadel or the castle of someone that they used to be allies with. And
right.
So they went in, they had to coordinate knocking down all the walls and actually fighting the other people. So it's not truly what I would consider PvE, although they were gaining objectives during the whole battle, you know, so
right.
It could kind of really be interpreted in that, but I'm just not sure I want that type of involvement in an instance.
I'm not either. And, you know, I'm not so interested in PvP, but reading, it's Drakus who kind of took the thread to the, he was in KGB. Just reading his posts kind of got me inspired. I was like, oh, PvP can be awesome if it's like this. And, you know, I would really recommend people go there and you know, read the thread and participate, because it's a really terrific conversation. And even for you out there who are not PvPers, you know, it was very inspiring. So anyway, thank you, Drakus, for posting your thoughts, your lengthy thoughts. I guess that's about it, right? We want to let people know that they can contact us through our website at CorellianRun.com. We have our forums, which we just talked about. And you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. There we have some nice, easy little one-click buttons on the upper right page of our site. You can also leave a voice message by finding the Google Voice button on our site or by calling 281-766-4511. We would love to play your messages on our podcast. Oh, and I also just want to say thanks to Ford, who just joined our forums recently and actually suggested the Sith or Jedi, the test of the express checkout, which we use today. So thank you. Great, great suggestion.
And you can subscribe to our podcast from iTunes or Zune, or you can download it straight from our website. We'd like to thank those who left us a feedback on iTunes, and that is Lord Hammer and Aroline. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsor, Guild Launch. That is the place to go for full-featured guild web hosting. You can check them out at guildlaunch.com.
That wraps it up for us at Corellian Run Radio. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks, Roxanne, for joining us. It's been great having you here.
Well, thank you, guys.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see everyone in a couple of weeks.
Until next time, I'm Carla.
I'm Kathy.
And I'm Roxanne. May the Force be with you.
And may you never get stuck behind an overflowing cart.
You've been listening to Corellian Run Radio, a Star Wars The Old Republic podcast. Tune in next time to hear Kathy say...
So, this is what I'm thinking. The way BioWare could make Tor even more awesome? Zombies.
And transmission.